So during this retreat, we have been inquiring into the record of Master Linji and reading excerpts and giving talks on this known as the Linji Lu. And so tonight, I'm going to start out by reading you the excerpt that I'd like to talk about tonight. If people of our own time are not able to realize the fruits of the practice, why is that? It's because they do not have the virtue of self-confidence. Because you do not have the virtue of self-confidence, you are always preoccupied, in a hurry to run after myriad kinds of objects outside yourselves. And then you are turned around in circles by these objects and lose all your freedom. If you are able to put an end to the thinking that chases after external objects, you will see that there is no difference between you, yourselves, and our teacher, the Buddha. Do you want to know who our teacher the Buddha is? The Buddha is you yourselves who are standing before me, listening to me teach the Dharma. And so this record of Master Linji, this retreat is my first introduction to this. I have never read it before, and I am so touched by its message and its teaching. When I first came to Buddhism as a young woman, I remember I read the Four Noble Truths. I picked up a book called The Compassionate Buddha, and the very beginning of it was the Four Noble Truths. And I read it and I thought, why didn't someone tell me about this before? And I have the same feeling reading this record of Master Linji, especially this section about the virtue of self-confidence. And this virtue of self-confidence, it sounds similar to other teachings from everyone from the Buddha who told us to be a lamp unto ourselves and turning the light around to search within. But to me, there's a little bit of a different emphasis in this, having self-confidence. So we might turn the light around to look within, but do so without very much confidence at all. We might feel that we're just searching, hoping something will turn up for us, and can spend a long time in that kind of state of, you know, maybe a bit of a panic that we don't have the capacity to do what's being asked of us. And here we have Linji giving us a totally different approach. And I think he's saying, if you're a beginning student, have the confidence that you completely have the ability to discover what must be discovered for you and by you and about you. And believe in that, have faith in it. And I think for the more experienced practitioner, it is about having confidence in what you have come to know for yourself and in what you have realized, and not allowing anyone or any set of circumstances to convince you otherwise. I was looking at koan recently, and I thought it kind of expressed this in a very descriptive way. So the student went to the master and said, what is the meaning of a terrible wind blows the ship off course to the realm of the Rakshasas? The Rakshasas are the demons, the realm of the demons. And so then the master grabs the student and shakes him and says, you idiot, what a stupid thing to ask. And then the student turns completely white, you know, just deer in the headlights look. And the master says, the wind has blown your ship off course to the realm of the Rakshasas. So we know this, how this happens to us, whether it's a master or whether it's something that happens in our life that just seems to unmoor us, completely unmoor us, and we go floundering off to the land of the demons. And here is Linji saying to us, be confident in yourself, be confident in what you know, and return to this over and over. When I was a young woman and new to Zen, I studied with other teachers and other schools. And I was at Sesshin once, and I was practicing Mu. And I was very deeply practicing. And I was standing in a kind of vestibule all by myself, very deeply working on Mu. And the teacher came up to me. I didn't see him approaching because I was all alone and there wasn't anyone else around either. And the teacher hugged me. And in that moment, things did fall away for me. There was suddenly no self and other, and it was brief but quite a profound experience for me. And because I was young and I was new to Zen and I was naive, I believed that this experience came from the teacher, that it was the teacher who had the power to make me see the reality in a way I hadn't previously. And so I ceded whatever confidence I might have had to this teacher. And I went on like that for quite a long time, really kind of becoming a member of a cult, you know, believing that there was this guru who had what I didn't have, and I needed to stay close to him in order to be close to what I knew was very, very important. And it took me a long, long time to come to some understanding and a lot of difficult circumstances to come to some understanding that it was not the teacher. And this happens, you know, it happens in our Zen communities, it happens in all kinds of spiritual communities, it happens in all kinds of environments where we human beings intermingle. And we, you know, cede our power to another, even if they don't ask for it. You know, there's something very human about this process of believing that we don't have the capacity and needing someone else to reveal it for us. And so when Linji really exhorts us in his irascible way to have this self-confidence, I think we have to examine closely what does he mean by self-confidence? This idea of self is problematic, right? We know plenty of people who have confidence in themselves, confidence in their personalities, and confidence in what they have learned and what they know. And these are not people who we feel probably have really any kind of insight into the true matter, right? It's kind of easy to pick them out. So Linji is not talking about that kind of self-confidence. He's talking about the confidence in this self, this person of no rank, who comes forth and goes into the world and returns and through all of our senses is always present with us in this very moment, in no other time or place, but in just this moment of breathing and sitting and being completely at home with that which we deeply know to be our home. It is so hard to talk about what this self is in which we should be confident. But I did find another quote from the Linji Lu that I thought was a really beautiful expression of it. And he writes, "Just make yourself master of every situation, and wherever you stand is the true place. No matter what circumstances come, they cannot dislodge you from there. Though you bear the influence of past delusions, or the karma of having committed the 5 heinous crimes, these of themselves become the ocean of emancipation." And with that, I say thank you. And so now is our Dharma dialogue time, and we have a chance to sit comfortably and allow the person of no rank to come forward freely and express what we all are thinking. He's quiet tonight. Joanne, yeah.
So that was wonderful, and thank you so much for coming up with all that. And I was, you know, I feel like I'm here even when I'm not here. I'm so glad everyone is here. I'll say that 50 million times. And so I was in a situation where, all right before I came here, where I was realizing that lots of people have a lot of influence on them. It was a party, actually, you know, but a lot of influence on them and what they think about things. And I was wondering what some people were thinking about some things, and some of it had to do with me. And I just watched it, and I realize so many things that are really beyond my control. I think, thankfully, I'm not sure what the 5 heinous crimes are, but I'm not sure, but, you know, I mean, I am, you know, a human being, and but I can see myself making up a worry, and I thought I had, I'm not trying to say, oh, you guys have just had this amazing experience, but I really did just have this amazing experience where I was noticing it and just like it was snowing, like it was just snowing or something. And then you said all that, and you said that last line of Linji, and I had been thinking to myself, you are just, they are just like you. Everyone is just like you. And everyone has their whole past and karma and whatever, you know, the karmic actions and behaviors that we are all in on. Everyone has them. And so if you get caught up in that, it's a way of allowing everyone to get caught up in that. It felt like that. And then I thought, and just because I think that doesn't change anything that has ever happened. And when you just read on top of like the whipped cream and the cherry, big time, that last line, I thought I was going to explode in the most insane goodness knows.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
And
yeah.
It's so amazing.
It is so amazing.
Like it's and I have been in places in my life that are very similar to what you're saying. I mean, I'm talking serious hell realms of of deferring, deep to deferring that I don't even know what I'm doing. So to have just an inkling of that stationary place, that I don't remember the words you used, it doesn't take much. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? It just doesn't, it was just a little thin veneer.
You know, there's a line in one of the texts we've been chanting, a hair's breadth deviation, and you are out of tune. Right? And there's this like, just, and that's what you're talking about.
When I have read that, I'm like, oh crap, a hair's breadth.
Yeah.
Oh, but, yeah, well, but I'm already way in the ditch. I've been there the whole time. I'm going to stay there the whole time. But
I'm just going to interrupt you for a second. You just really said it beautifully, really beautifully. And this hair's breadth deviation, if you use it as a way to beat yourself up, right? Oh man, I'm out of tune. But this experience you had, everything just came into tune, and it comes from the experience. That's the self-confidence, I think, that you were talking about. Mm-hmm. You know that I know this for myself, not because I read it somewhere or somebody told me about it, but I just experienced it. Oh right, and it's like those experiences I read about. So it starts from experience. And goes outward. Yeah. The other thing I wanted to say, Joanne, is as you were talking about the snow falling, there's a beautiful koan, line from a koan that says, 1,000 mountains are covered with snow. And it's like every mountain covered with snow. All human beings have this Buddha nature, right? Yeah. And that's, I think, also what you were experiencing. Mm-hmm. So, thank you. Mm-hmm.
I like that the virtue of self-confidence, that it's a virtue.
Yeah, that's a nice word, isn't it? Yeah, that caught me too. Mm-hmm.
That it's because self-confidence can sound exactly what you were also describing, that it's kind of negative that or something. That, so this is like a virtue. So.
Like it could be cultivated, you know? Like
Yeah.
That's what it seems like to me too, paying attention to it. And yeah, it doesn't, probably that's the only thing you need to do is pay attention to it. That's how to cultivate it, I think. So.
And it's interesting too, because we have, there are these negative associations we have, and we're told, you know, don't be so full of yourself, or who do you think you are? Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of stuff on that side that I think, well, I shouldn't.
Yeah, go ahead. You know, I was wondering about that. So what are we talking about when we talk about self-confidence that's not being full of, and what is being full of yourself? And I think of Donald Trump, right? I mean, I think, you know, and really it's something about self-confidence includes in our way not knowing and not clinging to fixed ideas. And I think what's so difficult about the self-confidence that is distancing and shuts us off is that it is about fixed ideas, and it's about a knowing things that can't be fixed.
And the confidence of a as a place to stand, not as a fixed position.
Yes.
In that last
that
thing,
line,
it's so really, so beautifully really said.
He said, just make yourself master of every situation, and wherever you stand is the true place. No matter what circumstances come, they cannot dislodge you from there.
Right. And master not in the sense of controlling external conditions, or even internal conditions.
And I like that, wherever you stand is the true place, and it's going to be different every moment, right? Mm-hmm. But that's the true place.
Right, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Did you have any more to say for a second?
I was thinking of, because you were talking about amazing experiences, So I And about confidence, I was just before I came here during the rest period, I felt sleepy, and I wanted to go to bed, but then I decided I'm not going to, and then I went outside and I was dancing. It was that situation where my mind can like go, okay, this is not an amazing experience, and this, but it was really there was something about this confidence and moving and
Just like when we were doing that fast kinhin today. You know, it's just like a confidence in just going where your feet take you, right? You know, that's so simple and so, you know, as exciting as whatever, inventing something, you know? It's just, I relate to what you're saying.
Cede our power to the jiki in that moment with the fast kinhin going
on. Well, and actually, many people bowed out. Yeah. To take care of themselves, to take care of ourselves.
Also
self-confidence.
Yes, right.
Following you everywhere. Well, not maybe here.
Ray, you were going to...
Well, I think people have been talking about a number of things. Confidence, self-confidence, and for me, the way I bolster my self-confidence is by being rigid about something, you know, and it's hard to not do that, especially when I feel like I'm called to be accountable, and I feel like I need to defend, but to have the confidence that's relaxed and playful and dancing is a hard place to maintain in the face of my own stuff and my fear of criticism and judgment and, from the world, in which I fight so hard to find a place to be, have some ground under me in this world, where we're all competing for some legitimacy. It's to let that go seems incredibly difficult. It's a matter for me of getting glimpses, and that's why I like to practice. Get glimpses of that freedom. Nothing to do. Nowhere to go. No ground to defend.
Yeah. Well, I'm really struck by the word legitimacy and how we so look for... We need other people to think a certain thing so that we can be legitimate. And then we're in the manipulation business, trying to make other people think we're good or, resist. And this feels like an inner legitimacy, somehow not depending on, some teacher or friend or client or boss, but standing in this territory that we don't have to defend, because there's no fixed position. I think we all know it. When we feel it, like we all get glimpses of that, it's really freedom, right? Freedom from the tyranny, from the ancient struggle. And even when people out there aren't struggling, I'm still fighting. But we get glimpses in our practice and in our life where not a problem at all.
And as much as Linji keeps talking, he's shouting and hitting and fierce and shaking people and all this stuff. The name of the book of Thich Nhat Hanh's translation, isn't it? Nowhere to go, nothing to do, nothing to do, nowhere to go, something like that. That's the essence of his teaching. This stuff, you don't have to do it. It's not about you doing something. And I think that's the key difference. And he talks over and over again about how it's just going to come to you. It's waiting to come to you. It's longing to come to you. It, the thing that we long for, which is, you know, this, not the rigid self-confidence that you know isn't it. It's the hair's breadth deviation again, you know, but the just the capacity to go outside and dance in the cool air outside the temple. But then we have to be careful, right? Oh, okay, that's what I'm supposed to do, and then everybody will be out there tonight in the parking lot.
Yes. So it's Saturday night.
Saturday night. What are those 10 people doing now? The neighbors are going, what are they doing now? So no strategies. No.
Yeah, they're doing lynchy.
They're doing the lynchy loo. Lynchy loo.
I think Mike had his hand up too. Mike, did you have something you wanted? No, it was okay. Steve, sorry.
So I find myself wondering about this master of all situations, right? Because I had this fantasy about it of, you know, just intuitively knowing how to handle any situation that might come up, you know, and being successful in dealing with all situations, you know? and it seems so impossible, and like, you know, that could never possibly describe me, you know. And I was thinking, well, so what if this master of all situations wasn't actually like that, right? It was like when I'm falling, you know, the master of falling. Slip and land on my face. It's master of landing on my face, and to have this self confidence, to have it be okay that I look silly and people are laughing at me, you know, and I'm mortified, and to you know, in some sense, be master of, you know, so you know. It's,
You remind me of a story. I heard Oliver Sacks interviewed on the radio once, and you know, this great author who recently died, just incredible, deep human being, great insight. Apparently, he was very rigid about his lifestyle, and that, you know, every Thursday was lentil salad, and then in the evening it was a different meal, and he had a housekeeper that did this. And the person interviewing him said, well, you know, you're this wise, wonderful person. Aren't you embarrassed by this? And he said, oh, yes, I'm terribly embarrassed by this. And there he was. He was the total master in the embarrassment of his rigidity. Oh, yes, I'm terribly embarrassed.
Your talk. I had an experience just after rest period or during rest period there, and I think it relates to self-confidence in some way, but I've been kind of practicing sort of mindfulness before that, trying to be mindful in different ways of what I was doing. And I decided to take a nap, and I did, and then the bell rung, and I kind of, you know, I woke up, and there was like this panic, like I felt disoriented, like I wanted to be mindful and to practice, or but I couldn't even, like my mind was kind of swimming, and I couldn't almost like get hold of anything, And it was terrible. Like it was bad, and I felt like it was this terrible. And that happens sometimes where I'm not ridiculous well, how could I even call myself a Zen practitioner or something if just total disorientation like that? But and I think of, you know, sometimes if somebody were, you know, old and kind of becoming senile, and these periods came where they were disoriented like that, and maybe they'd been a, well, that's a different story. But yeah.
But there's that moment of disorientation, mm-hmm. And then you had an opinion about it.
Well, yeah.
You're grabbing for things.
Trying to grab something, and I couldn't get anything, and it was.
And how did you get here?
Got up and walked up here.
That's the miracle.
That's the line. When it's time to walk.
and you know,
disoriented. You know,
yeah, disoriented. But
the master,
who's walking, and this is so similar to what Steve was just saying. You know, that we have these ideas about what mastery would be. Mm-hmm. So mindful of every situation, you know, mature Zen student, blah, 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 blah. But what if being the Buddha of disorientation, the master of disorientation is it? And you gave a talk recently where you're talking about not knowing, mm-hmm. and that because there's something that's so essential in Zen practice about really deeply not knowing. And you said something like, and so this is what we have to look forward to, even in dementia. You know, there's this quality of not knowing, like, we'll be the master of being demented at that point. You didn't say it exactly. You said it better than that.
You said it better, but...
No, you said it better.
That's all we'll have left, is not knowing.
That's just so great, you know, and in a way, so if we're idealizing the path, then that's the hair's breadth deviation. Mm-hmm. And we do, we idealize the path. We set ourselves up. We think, I'm going to be this kind of person, that kind of person. But what if the true person of no rank is right here in this condition, the way we are now, waking up from a nap, disoriented? I woke up from my nap this afternoon, And apparently we were showing a movie in the center, and I missed. It was 4:30 instead of 2:30, and I'd missed 2 hours of it. And David came in and told me I was dreaming. He told me that what happened in the movie, but I was dreaming. I was so disoriented. Mm-hmm. And then I heard the bell ring, and I just came downstairs. You know, that I could hold that up as, oh God, you're a real poor excuse for whatever, or how interesting. Wow, what was that? What just happened? Which is a, you know, you can feel the slight difference, right? And the habit of self-flagellation is so strong in us. You know, you shouldn't have been dreaming. You shouldn't have been disoriented. You shouldn't have fallen flat on your face. Mm-hmm. That's a evidence of something.
Mm-hmm. And Jason, as you were reporting that experience of waking up, there were a number of heads in this window. thank you for naming that place, because we all have our version of that. And in the midst of mindfulness, in the midst of clear intention, suddenly we can't remember who we are or what we're doing or what to do. That is a place. Thank you.
It's interesting that there's styles of teaching that emphasize supporting self-confidence in the student, and then there's another form that's about constantly trying to cut away the ego, and you know, it's interesting, I think, in the day that we live in now, and the times that we live in, self-confidence is pretty important.
Mm-hmm. And apparently it was important in Linji's time, too. Mm-hmm. And he was also a master of undercutting the ego. Mm-hmm. So those two things don't have to be mutually exclusive.
And there's some Zen centers you can go into and they just yell at you, and if you're wrong you get shouted at, and I think our way is much more is getting to the same place, but saying, you know, your life will undercut you. Yeah, your life will hit you over the head. That's the big stick. And that one of the things we intentionally cultivate by sharing the teaching, by sharing the leadership, is the innate wisdom of us all, and really trusting that, honoring their different levels of experience, and we play different roles, but this mutuality we were talking about the other day really is part of our style here. And there are other schools that are quite different, and it is, you know, what we'll just cut you up until there's only the true person left. And we say, well, we'll just pour a little water on you and give you a little warmth and sunlight, and the true person will emerge.
Well, we did have a meeting earlier today, and I think we're going to go back to the yelling and the hugging you in the vestibule. You know, as a form of teaching. But we've all experienced that. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's some value to it, and also some great harm that comes. So, who knows?
Yeah. Well, let's take another breath, and then we'll begin our walking.